All right, so this is the UCB Digital Podcast, and we're here with Adam Sachs today. Hey,
hello.
Adam. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good.
So, Adam, we haven't really talked about what we're going to talk about here.
No, not at all.
Not at all, but that's okay. So I guess maybe the good place to start is for you to give a little bit of I'll give a little bit of your bio, right? You're a director and a writer, and you also have done a significant amount of, like, DP work, too, right? For comedy stuff.
Just for comedy stuff, not professionally. I mean, I'll shoot if someone needs to shoot it and there's not someone better around. I can, like, run a camera, but I'm not. I would never hire myself out as a DP.
Right. And you edit?
Yes.
And you do effects, and you do animation.
Mm-hmm.
And you do animation as a day job. Effects and animation, is that what your job is?
Now, when I started doing comedy video stuff, it was like animation for like kid shows. Now I work at a place where it might be character animation, it might be like effects comping stuff into screens, it might be shooting video. It's like kind of a all over the place job.
Cool. So it's a pretty diverse skill set that you have in digital filmmaking.
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess, like, for you, let's go back to sort of like the beginning of your professional and UCB career. How did you wind up here? How did you wind up at UCB and doing stuff in the video side of things?
How did I wind up at UCB first?
Yeah.
Like, I guess just I was like working in a lot of children's animation television, and it found it very soul crushing. So just sort of on a whim, just looked up writing classes. I was like, oh, I think UCB teaches like has like sketch writing. That might be fun. And it was back when you could just on a whim look up a class and actually be able to register for it.
Sure.
Yeah. So that worked out well.
What year was that?
That was 2007.
Okay.
And then I took one class. I then left for 6 months to direct a TV show that was being animated in Malaysia. And then came back and kept doing more UCB stuff. And then basically my timing just kind of lucked out that they were looking for video directors. Around the time when, like, I finished like 301 sketch and like maybe like 101 improv, and I was like, oh, this is great. This works out pretty well.
Cool. And that was that was the first beta team.
Yeah. So that would have been 2009 or something, or 2010. I don't remember.
I think it was 2009. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like it's somewhere in there.
Yeah.
That's interesting because we were on that first beta team together.
We were, yeah, the Brig.
That's right. The first, the original beta team.
Oh, the team everyone remembers.
Sure, everyone remembers.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Uh-huh, for sure. But I guess that's interesting because I had thought that you'd been around in the community longer than that. I thought that I was like the most junior community member on that team.
No.
Which I still think I was, but I thought you had been around longer because it seemed like you knew some of those guys.
I knew Matt Mayer because we had done Sketch 301 together.
Okay.
But other than that, he was the only one I knew. I think we were all pretty new.
Sure.
But yeah.
So that team was, can you remember everybody who was on the original incarnation of that team?
I mean, probably.
Okay.
Is this going to be interesting to people?
I think so.
Okay.
To me, anyway.
you're really the only one going to be listening to this podcast, so it's fine. So it was me and you, Matt Mayer, we're up to three. Zach Phillips, that's four. John Gutierrez is five. Crystal.
Delahante
is six.
Uh-huh.
Mackenzie.
Condon.
Easily the most successful person out of that group.
Definitely.
Is seven. And I think that's it.
I think that's it, too.
I think that's it, yeah. And Will Hines was our first coach.
That's right. Yeah. Wow, feels like a long time ago.
Yeah, and like, I mean, up until that point, I had done very little like actual live action shooting.
Uh-huh.
Like, up until that point, I knew how to animate and like I wanted to make funny videos. So I was like doing like motion graphics or like animated comedy videos for the most part. And then that team was kind of where I learned how to shoot live action.
Right.
So basically, I learned how to shoot live action from you because you were the only one who had any technical knowledge about how to shoot live action. Because, like, Mayer and myself, I mean, we knew small stuff, but, like, didn't really know lighting. Certainly didn't know, oh, you got to gel a light blue if you have window light coming in and you want it to match.
Right.
Like, that was in the first shoot. I was like, oh, I'm really learning stuff here. This is great.
I guess I didn't realize that was... So, up until that point, you'd done mostly animated stuff. Because you had that, like, iPhone video that had done really well, right?
Yeah. I did, like, a parody of, like, there's an app for that thing that did well. But that was all animated. with just voiceover. I'd done a few other voiceover things. I'd shot one or two live action things. I'd bought a Canon HV20, which was like, it was back when little camcorders had tape in it.
Sure.
But it could shoot 16:9 and at, I think, 720p on tape. So it was like this weird in-between thing. And I shot a few videos on that, but nothing that looked amazing. I certainly had no idea how to light anything at that point or how to mic people. I think I just had like a shotgun mic on the camera. It would like stand far back from people and use that for my audio. Yeah, so I think I shot something in a boardroom and it was very echoey.
Sure. So I guess at that point, you were sort of making that transition, but you were still during the day doing, you're still on that kid's show.
I was on a children's show called Team Umizoomi at the time. And that was like paying my bills.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess at that point, it seemed like you really threw yourself into it.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much like every night was editing or writing something for it, like pretty nonstop for the first year, for sure.
Right.
It was like a lot. And some of it was just I had to teach myself how to edit better because like I didn't have the best practices. Like I didn't know all the keyboard shortcuts at first. And like watching you edit once, I was like, oh, that's what it's supposed to look like. Like you're supposed to be able to move quickly. And like learning that stuff, learning, sorry, what was the question?
Well, I was just saying you sort of threw yourself into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I remember you doing a lot of work at that time. Like it was like, kind of like Adam was making something constantly.
Yeah, I would be like editing something or doing effects for something or animating something. Uh-huh. Like pretty much every night I would just come home and work on something else for a while.
And when did you sort of, because at that time as well, as I remember you were writing most of the sketches. The sketches we were getting through that Will was approving, the majority of them at a certain point early on were all of yours.
I think early on that was true because I understood what was doable, you know? Like I remember there'd be like a script and it was like, all right, and we're in a giant warehouse and there's like 12 people fighting and they're like jumping off of like balconies and it's just like, that's going to need a budget. Like we can't do that.
Right.
Whereas I could be like, oh, well, here's something that could work in a living room and not really require too much extra. And then I think, you know, all the other writers kind of like figured out what can and can't work when you're working on low to no budget stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe talk a little bit about that as a writer then. Is as a writer, how do you sort of make analyze what is doable and what isn't doable for production?
I mean, it's good to stretch, but I'd say especially if you're starting, like if you don't have it or know someone who has it, don't require it in your script because it will be hard to get. It will be hard to do. It might be impossible to do and you'll spend a lot of time on it, especially when you're starting. Like do things that use what you have. I think it's good too, just you'll get in more reps, you'll make more videos. I'm not proud of early stuff I did, so don't even like worry about whether it's like your like great achievement as like a comedian or as an artist. Just make stuff. And then once you are used to doing things that are easier, then you can like constantly like ratchet up the difficulty until, you know, you are ready to like find hard to get locations. And once you get those hard to get locations, once you've shot a bunch of stuff, you're gonna like know what to do. So whereas like if you just started and you like, for instance, got maybe, I don't know, the Cyclones baseball stadium in Coney Island, if you've never shot a video before, that might be a little overwhelming. But if you've done a bunch of stuff, you'll probably go in knowing exactly what you need to do and be able to use the space better.
Sure.
So basically just start small and like keep working up.
And it kind of sounds like you're also putting on a little bit of a producer's hat there, even in your writing.
I mean, it's not ideal.
Sure.
And like sort of like you almost like don't want to tell writers that to like limit them. But it's also if you want to make it, it's going to be easy. It's more likely to happen.
Sure.
You know, or, you know, get one big reach like, OK, I need a dentist office. Like that's not going to be easy. So maybe don't require a dentist office and a Chinese restaurant and the White House.
Sure.
Unless you have like know how to fake a lot of that stuff.
And I remember from those early days as well, like the original mandate that we were under was like a video every 2 weeks, right?
I think,
or was it every week?
I think, I mean, Anthony, just like threw something out there. Anthony King was the artistic director at the time. Like, it was like, oh, a video a week. Like, and then I think it was very much like, we'll see how doable that is.
Right.
And, you know, with a team of seven people,
it wasn't possible.
It's not possible. I mean, we did
a lot.
We did pretty good.
Yeah.
But we also kind of like, what I feel like we didn't realize until later when we like sort of compiled a lot, we had a lot of presentational videos
sure.
that would establish an idea and then just do joke, and the jokes would just kind of speed up
yeah.
and like until it kind of like ran out of steam.
Sure.
And then it would be over.
Right.
Like we kind of were just like on a trajectory that just like very quickly heightened, tried to escalate very, very quickly, and then just like get out of it.
Very quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's definitely true. Yeah, but like, so in that first year, we probably made like 50 or something videos. It was something ridiculous.
Well, that would be like one a week.
It was like, or maybe it was like in the year and a half. Like a year
I
and
feel
half.
Like in the year and a half or 2 years, yeah. we probably made like 50 or something.
I think Matt Mayer knows the exact number. Because I remember him saying like he produced, I remember him saying to me once, I produced 47 videos while I was on.
Really?
He definitely knows the number.
Wow, and he wasn't even on the whole time.
Yeah, but so it was like, it was a ridiculous amount of videos.
Yes.
So you're getting in a lot of reps.
Yes.
You're doing a lot of sketch comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then even as the beta teams, they were still beta, progressed, you started to do stuff with the Punch as well.
Yeah, that was the second team I was on.
Do you think that for you, and I think that like what, I guess maybe this is an observation, it seems like that you've, as time has gone on, gravitated less towards writing and more towards directing.
I think that's fair to say.
And it also, it seems like your sensibility has changed a little bit. Because I think at the very beginning, I remember the first video we did was like, it was like middle ditch unboxing a MacBook
yeah, it
Pro.
Was a parody of unboxing video where basically, and it starred Thomas Middleditch.
Yeah.
And it just became clear that he just wanted to, it was like a sex tape. He just wanted to have sex with
right.
the Mac he was unboxing.
But that was very like, it was sketch, it was heightney, it was
super,
and also
like,
internet oriented.
Yeah, it was internet oriented. It was like high concept game.
Yeah,
you know, and I still, that stuff can be fine. It's just a little less interesting to me yeah. 6 years in, you know.
So I guess the question I would have is then, because it seems like, so one, you've gravitated more towards directing, and two, I think that it seems like the stuff that you're working on has become less sketch game oriented and more you're interested in more, I guess, like what are you more interested in now from a creative perspective?
Things that have scenes.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I think that's probably the big thing is I'm not really interested in my free time in directing. Like for money, I'll direct whatever,
right.
you know, but in my free time, I would rather direct a short or a scene that has people in it like talking and like that would be more like a movie or a TV show thing as opposed to just like a presentational joke. And like some sketch, like some scene stuff that we've done could be basically seen as a sketch, you know, but the sketch would be less of like the high concept. Oh, we're pretending A is like B and more of just like the fun is and just like it could be like plot twist, which is very much not sketch. Sketch isn't supposed to have plot or just in character stuff like just like what you know, aspects to a character have and like how can you like find different ways to like bring out those aspects and like make it fun. But yeah, I guess it's less like what you would think of as a sketch now.
Sure.
Yeah.
And why do you think what has drawn you more towards directing than the writing side of things?
I think it's just when you're at home and you need to do something like and be productive, it's easier for me to sit down and plan a day of shooting than it is to like bang out a first draft, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just, I mean, I can still bang out a first draft if I need to, but it's more fun for me to like look at a script, see what I think is like really funny about it and what's the best way to get that on screen and how to show that in a way that will work and be funny and like honor the material, but also like find ways to like add extra stuff to it. That I think I'm better at that than I am at writing.
Cool.
But I'll also like rewrite. I mean, I'll usually like try to like do like a little pass on like scripts I'm working on, change things a little bit.
Sure.
Not like for my ego, but just like, oh, I see what that joke is. That joke works really well on the page, but visually that's not going to work. We're going to have to like change it a little bit. I think I'm better at knowing how to make an idea on the page actually work visually. Because sometimes, you have to kind of rejigger it. Writers mm-hmm. don't always think in a visual way.
Yes, and also you're dealing with the practicality of what that production is actually going to look like from a time perspective, from the location you have.
Oh, yeah, that's yeah. also yeah. a whole other.
And making all those choices. No,
yeah.
I definitely would agree. Like, I think that I would agree with that about you. That's where I've always seen a real strength from you is like in knowing what the joke is and being able to sort of like precisely get to it.
Thank you.
As a director.
I'll take that.
I guess then that sort of leads us into directing because you've so just to sort of like because now at this point in this community you're probably one of the more you know established comedy directors at UCB Comedy in New York. That's probably fair. You've been around for like 6 years now, right?
Yeah, but also I kind of feel like I've been around enough where like I don't know the newer generation, so I don't even think they know me at all.
Sure,
you know what I mean?
I don't know if that's true. But maybe. That's
yeah,
very
it,
possible.
I
this,
think it
this
might
place
be.
Is so huge now, oh, it's hard it, to tell who knows what.
It's gotten so huge. And now it seems like a new generation is like every year.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I mean, it's also partially my fault. I haven't been to a mod night probably in like over a year at this
sure.
point. So, like, you know, it's as much my fault as anyone else's. Right. But yeah, I mean, I directed a lot of videos. I think I'm sure a fair number of people know me.
Sure. How many videos do you think you'd say? Do you have any idea?
I saw recently, like, this certainly isn't all the videos, but, like, on YouTube, I like, have some playlist that's, like, oh, every video that I directed or something, like, every video I directed, I would, like, put in a playlist
sure.
of, like, videos I've directed, and I should really cut that down to be just, like, the good stuff
right.
because it's, like, way too long, but it will, like, tell you, like, what the runtime is,
uh-huh.
and it was, like, I want to say, like, 2.5 hours, and I was, like, oh, that's a movie.
Yeah.
I could have made a movie.
Seriously.
But also, I wouldn't have known how to make a movie when I started doing that.
Right.
But it is kind of like, just seeing like a time on that is kind of crazy.
Yeah. But I guess, so as a director then, you talked a little bit about it, but I guess what is your approach when you get a script and you make the changes that you want to it? Like, what is your approach going into planning a scene or a video?
It's usually, I sort of like, at the same time, plan out the staging and the shot selection because they're very intertwined. You know, like what people do, that's the staging, like their motions and actions will dictate what shots you have. Because it's not just like a something on stage where you just decide what they do and that's kind of it. So you have to decide what they do and then how to show it. And basically what I'll try to do is figure out like sections. Like, okay, so this first beat, this is what the dynamic is. Oh, well then in the second beat, there's like a change. So like maybe like person A who was high status is now low status. So that's like section two. And maybe in the second beat, there's an inversion. The person who's high status is low status. So what I like to do is try to have my shot selection, my shots reflect dynamics that are happening in the script so that, even if you're not hearing it, you can visually tell that there's something changing.
Uh-huh.
And then if there's like a big change in the script, that might be a reason for like a staging change, which will switch everything, you know? And like, I'll get really nitpicky on certain things. Like I'll decide like, okay, when everything's going well, like if people are walking, okay, when everything's going well, I want them to be walking left to right because that's how we read and it feels more natural. And then when they come to a problem, I'm going to do a shot where they walk into screen left to right, but then they exit right to left, and then all of our walking shots when there's a problem would be screen direction moving right to left because that's the opposite of how you read, so it feels more difficult, mm. right? And I'll get really detailed and strict on that type of stuff. So I try to have like a really good plan of shots and staging that try to reflect what's going on in the script. And then there's also just like, okay, when things are more intense, you're probably going to use more close-ups than wide shots, unless like it's like a reveal of someone who's there who you didn't know was there, then maybe you'll go from like a very tight shot to a very wide shot because it's like a surprising cut and then a surprising reveal. I'm sort of talking about videos that I'm working on right now without trying to give specifics
sure.
away. What else?
Do you storyboard?
I storyboard everything unless it is just people sitting at a table and it's just going to be over the shoulder shots. Cause I've done that enough times. I know how to do that, But like, even if they're sitting at the table, if it's a long table scene, I will figure out reasons and excuses to get past just those two shots. You know, like if there is a part that's maybe a little more aggressive against each other, that might be a reason to cut to profile shots of them. Because when you're cutting between people in profile, it feels more aggressive, like they're against each other, than when you're seeing them three quarter. And then if you're seeing them three quarter, clean versus dirty gives like a dirty means like the other person sort of their back and back of their heads in the shot. Like that gives a different feeling too, you know? So just try to always have your shots match or reflect also what's happening in the script and what's happening in the performance.
Where do you think that that approach came from for you? Is that something that you...
That stuff probably came from like going to art school for illustration and doing comics and stuff where like you have to make choices for everything. So it's not super interesting for me to just, you know, set up over the shoulder. I'm used to like planning stuff a little more complicated than that. But I mean, also sometimes just over the shoulder is the right way to do it. And like, that's fine. And you should also know when to not get too fancy. I've probably gotten too fancy on certain things when it's not necessary. But like, I always look for those reasons to kind of make it a little more, because like, I mean, there's so many comedy videos, like people are doing so much stuff. I think like one way to set yourself apart is to have a more dynamic, like visual approach to it too.
Sure. Do you think that working, I guess you're saying that yes is the answer to this, but do you think that working in animation does inform your approach to live action? How has that benefited you to have that wealth of experience?
I would say storyboarding for animation has, like animating, absolutely no,
because
you're just animating. Mm-hmm. But when you're storyboarding, you're planning out all the shots. You're doing the exact same thing you'd be doing storyboarding for live action. Only like in animation, if you board something, you're like, all right, we're going to do a wide shot. We're going to see someone walk in. If it's like their full body, you've just like increased the budget because an animator has to show a full body someone walking in, which is a lot harder than showing them from the waist up.
Sure.
And they just bounce. You know what I mean? So like, actually, like one of the things that's kind of nice about live action is like, it's like, oh, I can go wide whenever I want. I can like do angles that would be very hard to do in animation. One of the difficulties is in animation, locations are very easy. You just have to draw a background. Whereas in live action, you actually have to get access to places.
Right.
And like, yeah, a lot of the storyboarding too came from a class in college that I took that was like a comic book class that was taught by, David Mazzucchelli, who's like a big comic book artist guy. And the whole class was just every week he'd like kind of give an assignment. Like one of his most famous ones was like, you have to, using just visuals, like no dialogue, show the story of the tortoise and the hare. And you have 6 pages to tell it.
Right.
And it's like very challenging because you have to get across that the rabbit's fast, the turtle's slow. They have an argument. They agree to have a race. That's very hard to get across without dialogue. Then show them setting up the race, doing the race, and how it ends. You know, it's a lot of information to convey visually, you know? And like figuring out how to do that is a good challenge. And that's a lot of times what I'll think with even storyboarding live action stuff is like, you want to show whatever you're showing in the clearest way possible so that the information that's important is conveyed, you know? Because
right.
like you could shoot things or stage things in a way where like, maybe they get it, maybe they don't. And that's just the less, everything you can do to try to make it less confusing for the audience is like a good thing.
Sure. What's your approach with working with actors? It seems like you're very visually oriented.
Right. Yeah. I'm probably not like the greatest actors director but also the number one thing with actors is casting.
Sure.
Like I can't make a bad actor good, but I don't know how many people truly can do that, but like, I definitely know who's good, and like you want to get people who are like right for the roles, and that will do 90% of the work. And then a lot of times it's just like I often think like, oh, like how heightened are things, you know? So like, oh, we want to go slow, kind of like build it up, and then I think this is the line where, you know, turn it up or turn it down. And a lot of times it's just like adjusting, because like if you cast the right person, their instincts are going to be really very close to what you need.
Sure. As someone who also is an editor as well, I guess, and working on both sides of that relationship, director and editor, I guess as a director, how do you approach working with an editor in ways that you think that other directors could benefit from in that relationship? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Gosh, it's. I feel like I've edited most of my own stuff recently. I haven't like worked with someone else who's just been editing in a while. But I think having a sense of where you want what you want it to be, it's kind of really unfair to an editor to just give them stuff and be like, I don't know, make sense of this. Like, if you did a good job directing it, then you'll have like an idea of what you want, you know, so you can do this. And if it doesn't work, we can go from there and try to fix it. But this is also all for scripted stuff. Like, you know, like prank stuff or man on the street stuff is a whole other beast. But I mean, I guess usually it's just like have like a sense of what you want going in and then also be open to changes when what you want isn't working. Cause I don't think I've ever done something and had it work exactly how I wanted it to.
Sure.
Like usually I'll be editing and I'll be like, man, this is the one where I figured it out. Like everything I planned was working really well. And like, I'll have like a rough cut and then I'll show it to someone and I'll be like, and they'll be like confused about five things or like not sure. I'm like, oh, I screwed it up again. And then you got to like figure out how to fix it a little bit. I think that's probably true with everything. Nothing ever goes according to plan. But, and that's really, that is actually something nice with working with other editors is like just that other point of view of like how to, of seeing the stuff that you can't see.
Why do you think you haven't been working with editors recently? Is it just?
I mean, it's just been like, on like the team that I'm on, Goldwater, it's just me and Zach and just the way it kind of worked out with like what our schedules were like.
Sure.
It just worked out better for me to edit. I think on the Woods one that we did, is this too detailed to talk about a specific video?
No, why not?
So on the Woods Are Lovely, Dark and Deep.
Sure.
Zach and I sent it back and forth. Like, he did a cut. I did a recut. I sent it to him. He did a cut. Then I did a recut of that. And that was actually really helpful because I would be like, we were both working in Premiere, so we just send the file back and forth and we each had the footage. Because like I eventually got it to a cut where I'm like, I like this, but it feels a little long.
Yeah.
And I just sent it to him. I was like, don't tell me what you're going to do. Just tighten it up a little bit. And he sent me something back and it was shorter, but I couldn't tell where. It was like, that was great.
Yeah.
Because like, and that's like an awesome thing to get someone else's eye on that. And I also, what I like is showing the film to people who have no idea anything about it and not telling them beforehand what you're worried about, just show it to them and then just ask questions about like, okay, at this point, what did you think was happening? And don't tell them what you want them to think. Just, okay, you know, when he said, I'm going to go jump out of a plane, what did you think that meant?
Sure.
And then see if that matches up with what you thought it would mean. Also ask multiple people because, you know, you need a sample size bigger than one to know whether it's truly working or not. Mm-hmm. And just seeing like what worked for them, what didn't work for them. And then using that to inform your edits or if you can get like a live audience to view it, that's really helpful too because you can feel it when like an area is just like dying or like no one's interested. Yeah.
Cool. So you were talking about casting before. I don't know how to get you to answer that question. I'm trying to think of the right way to ask it.
So why is casting the most important part?
Yeah. I think you're trying to just like say that you're not.
I'm not.
You're
indifferent.
Not agnostic.
Yeah.
Indifferent to actors.
Is there any way to hear back what I said?
Here's an interesting question. Or here's an interesting way I can say it. I think that hearing your approach, your very visual oriented approach is really interesting because one of the things that I noticed this year is it used to be comedy. We talked to filmmakers in New York about like what their approach is to stuff as part of their application for digital teams. And we happened to do the same thing in Los Angeles this spring as well. And in New York, a lot of the directors' answers were about visual aesthetics and approaching a project that way. And in LA, I was really interested to see that a lot of their answers were, I enjoy working with actors. This was across the board that people would say that was their favorite part of the process. And I think that it just goes to, it's just the type of town that it is, right? That's the difference between our two cities. But I guess, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I mean, I like working with actors too. It's just, like acting is like by far the most important part of like any video.
Yeah.
Like, I guess maybe I wasn't saying that enough earlier because it just seems so obvious, but like you can have like the greatest shot selections in the world, but like if the acting's not good, it's you don't have anything, you know? And just you want to like kind of think about like what is it about the character that needs to communicate? So like, oh, is it like that this person is like a super like high status jerk?
Sure.
And that's then you want to like cast people who are very good at acting that way. And then sometimes it's then finding also ways that they can kind of like subvert that a little bit too. Sure. So it's usually just, I guess for me also just the working with the actor part is usually the least intellectual part. Cause it's usually just you watch the way, I mean, the way every take works is like, you know, you call action, they do the scene. Usually they haven't really read the script that much. So your first five takes are just to like,
get
the lines there. That's like a huge part of like working on no budget is learning how to shoot that way.
Right.
And then you just sort of like, for me, I just sort of like listen to like, there's a little twinge in my back when I don't like something, you know, I'm like, I don't like that. And so then you try to figure out what it is to change, what it is that you don't like about it and how to change it.
Yeah.
And then usually it's like you watch like a take and you're like, oh, that was great. But like there are five things I want to change. You can't tell them all five right away either because it's just too much.
Yeah.
So you just work. Okay. Well, the biggest thing is like, I think it's a little too angry at this. Like this is like, you know, early on in the story, like he doesn't know everything that's going on. Like he shouldn't react as big to this. So like, let's try to like find like the right level for that. Then you do another take and you're also realizing like, oh, you know, like maybe like, he's like posturing a little too much. So you just kind of just try to tweak everything just so that like they're giving you like the beats that you need to communicate what you need to get at that moment,
right.
You know? And also, and that's also, I mean, the way you shoot in video is like you never go through the whole script. I mean, very rarely,
right.
You know, you're usually breaking it down. So like also that is another thing I'd usually do when I'm planning the script is kind of keep track of like, you know, where people's emotion levels need to be. Because also, I mean, depending on actor availability, I mean, I recently shot something like completely inside out and backwards, last scene first, middle scene second, first scene last. So you have to like really like kind of know where everything has to be emotionally. And that's hard for the actors too, especially if they don't know the script that well. But like you're kind of like the person in charge of keeping track of that, you know? And so like I will definitely like in shot, like I'll have like my like shot list and I usually just have like this like extra little area, just like random notes. And usually it'll just be like, you know, how angry or like surprised someone should be at this moment or like how tired or, you know, if the whole point is like they're getting more tired and like out of it over the course of the thing, just keeping track of that stuff just so that you can tell the actor like kind of where they need to be and that it'll work in the larger piece.
Sure.
Because that's really hard to keep track of.
Yeah. I also kind of wonder if that difference in what people are expressing that they're, like their approaches to stuff also has to do with the type of jobs that are available. Because honestly, like in LA, it's as a director, you're walking into something that probably has more likely to have money involved in it in some way, more likely to have people who are more, a little bit more invested in it across the board and maybe even more talent driven.
Yeah.
Whereas here, I think a lot of people in this community as filmmakers are sort of like self-starter, like I got to get this thing going.
Yeah. And like a lot of times your performers are going to be like, you know, hired guns kind of like, and they're going to be fitting this in between teaching a class and doing like an indie show.
Sure.
So like, and that's how it should be. Like they want to be performers. They
Absolutely.
Should be performing as much as possible. And I'm always happy to get someone who's like an amazing actor. If you can only get them for 2 hours, make those 2 hours count.
Absolutely.
You know, but then that just means you kind of have to keep track
sure.
of a little more yourself.
Okay. Let's talk about a couple of things. Cause I know you got some strong opinions about things. The other thing that I'll say about you is you got very strong opinions. So what on the internet right now is the type of video that you never need to see again, ever?
List videos, I guess, where it's like 15 things that that only people from somewhere will understand. I guess it's like the BuzzFeed video thing.
Pretty much BuzzFeed.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's nothing wrong with those videos. I'm just not interested in them. Like I'm not particularly interested in making them. Definitely not interested in watching them. Like, though, actually, it's kind of funny because I think UCB might have done the first one of them. Was that the Melinda one of like things that feel normal when you live alone?
Oh, sure.
That was like 5-6 years before BuzzFeed. And it's kind of just what they've been doing
right.
ever since. But that one I liked at the time because it was like the first time you've ever seen that.
Sure.
Now it's like kind of a worn out trope. But I mean, hey, if it gets views, they should keep doing them. I just don't have to watch them.
What is the video from your past that is the one that you are least proud of? Least proud of. What's the one that if everyone goes and looks at it, they should say, this is not representative of Adam Sachs. It's still online. They can still go watch it. But, oh, no. Don't take this to be me.
God. I mean, honestly, like without having like my YouTube page open, I think I block them. Oh, gosh. Anything I did like 5 years ago? I don't know. Like,
well, maybe you think about it.
Man, that's a hard one. That's a tough one. I mean, I'm sure quite a few. I just try not to. Usually, like when I finish a project, I don't think about it.
Sure.
Like it's sort of like while you're working on it, it's your baby and you're going to give it your all. But then you like when you finish it, it's like you graduated college and it's like out in the world and like good luck to you.
Uh-huh.
But you're on your own and I'll worry about the next thing.
All right. Here's another question for you. are you, I guess, like as far as shooting stuff goes, how far away do you think we are from 1080 being obsolete?
It won't be obsolete, but I think people will want 4K, mm-hmm. whether it's necessary. I mean, honestly, like we're 1080 now. I don't know if I ever watch a video in 1080. You know, it's usually like in Facebook or in some blog and like it's rarely 720, you know? But I mean, professionally, things are already 4K. More and more, basically, it's just once enough consumer or prosumer cameras shoot 4K, it will start becoming more standard. But I honestly, like, just don't think for like a web comedy video that will ever matter because we're watching stuff on smaller and smaller screens. So, like, if your reason for making a video is you don't have like a 4K camera, like you shouldn't be making videos anyway. Cause like, that's like the least important thing,
sure.
You know? And also when you shoot 4K stuff, like your file sizes get huge. I mean, yeah, if you wanted to do a short film or like a movie, sure. You should probably do it. But I think for web stuff, I think people will do it, but I don't think it's going to be important for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you watch stuff 1080? I like never do.
I will look for it. If it's something that I really want to watch, I will look to see if it has that option.
Mm.
And now that YouTube can do 4K too, if I like have the connection, I will.
You'll do 4K?
Just to see just to see if my computer can handle it, honestly.
Right, because I feel like.
But the monitor's not even 4K most of the time anyway.
Yeah, so most monitors aren't 4K. And like, I mean, TVs that are 4K, like Netflix can stream 4K.
Uh-huh.
And like, how many TVs are 4K these days?
Not many, but all those Ultra HDs, that's like what they're trying to sell you.
That's
on
what
now.
They can. I mean, it's cool, but yeah. It's like spend that money on a sound guy.
Sure.
You know, like Ben's nodding to that.
Yeah.
Sounds very important to him. But you know, I mean like 4K, look, it's great if you can do it, but it's like so unimportant. I've never laughed at something because the resolution was great.
Sure.
You know?
On Facebook, Michael Caine asks, how many followers do you have on Vine?
Oh, that is a great question. I think I have like 50 followers.
Yeah.
It's pretty big. I've only made like 3 or 4 Vines though.
And what do you, like, I guess, how do you, why do you do Vine? Like, what does that add to your?
I mean, to be fair, I don't really do Vine. Uh-huh. My first Vine was just an animated thing I did of me shaving my beard. Because I used to do those years ago.
Uh-huh.
I was like, I'll do one again. And there's like a few Vines I want to do. It's just finding the time to do them in between all the other post-production I have to do mm-hmm. on videos. I think like the fun part is just like, can you come up with an interesting visual joke or surprise or pun or something that works looping and can have a little sound on it? Like Vine is not even close to a thing that I like put a lot of effort in. Like
right.
You should talk to like Avery
right.
about Vines. Like that's his thing. Like I'll mess around with it every now and then, but I don't really work on it that hard.
Cool. What's something on the internet right now that you love, you feel strongly about?
Huh. I mean, do you want to know like what my favorite sketch is this year?
Sure.
That's come out?
Sure.
I think it, I love this video so, so much. It's the Captain Hippo video, Who's Gonna Get It? Have you seen this?
No, I haven't seen it.
It came out like, I think it came out like the first week in January this year. It is still by far my favorite sketch. It is so silly and funny. It's like the three of them like in a waiting room, like at like an office, like a job interview. Uh-huh. And like they start pumping themselves up saying like, who's gonna get it? Who's gonna get it? Who's gonna get it? And then just they start chanting it. And then it just like heightens like insane things that they're doing, like pumping themselves up, still saying who's gonna get it. Like they pretend to like marry a horse at one point and like are dancing. And like it just, it's visually like yeah. it's constantly changing and inventive. Like they're committing so hard to performance. The editing and sound design is like perfect.
Yeah.
And then like it cuts to them in the job interview. And I won't tell you whether they get it or not.
Okay.
But it's great.
Cool. Yeah, those guys are fantastic.
Yeah.
And very like silly in the right ways and visually yeah. interesting in all the right ways.
And yeah, I feel like also like that video to me is very game centric. Like uh-huh. it has a very strong, the game is how many different ways can we like get pumped up saying who's going to get it?
Sure.
And like, but it's a very abstract game. It's not a high concept game at all. But like they have this like idea and they like heighten and explore it very, very well. But it doesn't end up feeling just like a standard sketch. And I think that's also something I really like about it.
Cool. What are you working on right now and when can we expect to see it?
Is this you asking as an interviewer or are you asking as like the head of editing for UCB Comedy?
I'm both. I'm asking when's that video going to be ready, Adam?
So I am in editing, in post, and like effects for two videos. One is a video written by Connor Ratliff, starring Brian Foss, who discovers an alien. And the joke, I guess the thing about this alien is it's kind of the anti-ET. It's very, very gross, and he doesn't want him, it around him at all. Uh-huh. And it like really grosses him out. And then the other one that I'm editing is one that Zach Phillips wrote, which is about an exit interview at a job that has a lot of twists and turns in it.
Cool. And we can expect those.
Uh-huh. Yes, okay. You can.
Sometime. Sometime in the future.
I agree
summer
with that
2015.
Statement.
Okay. We'll get more specific later. Cool. Well, Adam, thanks so much for coming and taking the time.
Appreciate thanks for having me.
UCB Digital Podcast is brought to you by UCB Comedy. Visit the YouTube site, youtube.com/UCB Comedy, for new videos every weekday from New York to Los Angeles. The best videos you'll ever see. Follow us on Twitter at UCB Comedy, on Facebook at UCB Comedy, on Tumblr at UCB Comedy, on Instagram at UCB Comedy.